Standout with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome to the show tonight. I hope I find you well on this Wednesday evening. I'm delighted to say that my guest this week on Standout with myself, Ian O'Connell, is Pat Falvey. Pat is a high-altitude mountaineer, expedition leader and polar explorer. He was the first person to complete the seven summits twice. With the summiting of Mount Everest reached from both sides, other extreme expeditions that he has made include walking to the South Pole, crossing South George Island and travelling the Greenland ice cap. Sit back and enjoy the show. Pat, thanks a million for joining me today. How are you keeping?
Absolutely great. Sunny side here in the Gap of Dunloe today. Mountains are looking fantastic. So good to be talking to you, man.
That's the right job. Can't be Killarney, as we were saying there. Do you want to bring me back to your childhood? I always bring my guests back just to paint a picture for the listeners. Growing up, what was it like, and were you interested in sports, and what was your childhood like?
Well, I had no interest in sports. I went to live with my grandmother when I was six. Her husband had left her and all the kids were gone, so I got the task of going down to mind her, but she put me to work very fast. It was like slave labor, but I never seen it that way because I love my grandmother. She bought me a pram, and my task was to go around and collect secondhand clothes. We came from a council estate in Cork with over 5,000 council houses, and at six I'd go along and I'd knock at the doors and say, any old clothes. I then bring them down to my grandmother in the Cold Kay, like the Moore Street ladies in Dublin, and she'd sort them out, and then she'd sell the clothes that I had brought down. But it's the first time I experienced collaboration, you know, in the sense of my grandmother put 20% away of everything she sold.
When you started, I suppose, the mountaineering and going on the kind of adventure side of things, what age were you when you... Because I remember reading, was your first climb the McGillicuddy Reeks in Kerry?
Yeah, like I suppose what happened, by the time I was 29, I was broke. Like, you know what I mean? I felt I was a failure to my family. And we talk about mental health. A mental health like nobody knows who it's going to affect.
Yeah.
And I lost my senses when it came to that direction and tried to take my life through suicide.
Really?
Failure, yeah. They were treating me with Prozac, and I have a... You know, I have a bit of an objection to doctors just prescribing it to people that are feeling down, because for me it was self-esteem depression, right? But it seems like a lot of people just dump it all into one. There's clinical depression, you know, like there's lots of different forms of depression. There's anxiety, there's fear. And this all brings on this kind of an enactin with the endorphins that make you feel down. And I couldn't believe that I was the person, the gregarious, gallerous, outgoing person. And I don't know whether you ever have down days yourself, but it brought me into down days that actually, you know, I tried to take my life through suicide by driving into the River Lee. And I just stopped seconds before I went in. And I keep on saying to people today, I see my two children, like, which were about 10 and 7 at the time, and I just stopped in time. And I say to people now, like, you know, the best thing to do is talk.
Yeah.
So for that instance, I came home, talked, and you know what, I was surprised, and it's an amazing thing, everybody needs it. And I know you too, right, have had this. People to have your back.
Exactly.
It's so important, right? Okay. So like when things go wrong, like I was talking to your father, I think, like, you know, I was so proud, and, you know, like your family around you to have your back, right? And it's that will bring you back and give you the confidence in relation to what you go on to do. So that's what happened to me. I went home, told my wife. My wife had my back. My mom and dad had my back. And in actual fact, when I gained my confidence back, but I like, as you say, how I got it back was very strange. I came to Kerry.
Go to that.
And I went for a climb. And this is what I tell people sometimes. Sometimes you need to relax your mind, right? And do something different to what you're in. And I never forget it, like, you know, I got to the summit of Carrum Tool, and like I've done it about 3,000 times since. And it's like I got such a buzz because the banks were taking us to court, my marriage was falling apart, my business was gone down. I was depressed. And next, all of a sudden, for the first time in years, And I know we're going through COVID at the moment, and this has happened to a lot of people. I did a small thing that I became successful at, and I never forget, I was on the summit, and I even didn't want to go there. And I put my hand in the air and I said, yes, I'm on top of Carlin Tool. For me, it was my Mount Everest at the time. But what I said to the guy, like, you know, that I was with, he said, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? I said, Val, I'm going to climb Mount Everest. And he came back after and he said, we all thought you were right bollocks, like, you know, to say that you could come first time and say. But that actually set me on a train of thought that made me go on to meet amazing people here in Kerry, the likes of Con Moriarty, Gene Tagney, and lots of other people that had this passion for climbing. And it connected me with this. Do you know, like, the way that when you say something, it can connect you with other people and you don't even know you're going to be connected to them. But when you, like, it's like an energy. It's like the outer cosmos, you know, descending upon you. And it's like that you go around in an energy and you attract similar-minded thinking people. And from that moment on, I was on a journey. I joined Kerry Mountain Rescue, which, you know, has been phenomenal training for me. It's what gave me all my skills that I needed to go on around the world, like to do 185 expeditions. It gave me the connections that connected me to people like in the seven continents, it's probably in the six continents, Antarctica. Well, I have met people in Antarctica too, but it's now after giving me the spirit to have become an adventurer and an explorer. And I went down from mountains to polar to speaking. So it gave me a whole new life on top of rebuilding my business.
And like you said about surround yourself with like-minded people, a quote that I always go by is, show me your friends and I'll tell you who you are. And I think it's so true, because who you kind of surround yourself with, that'll help you reach your goals as well. You mentioned there about the different continents, the seven summits as well. When you were doing them, how long between each one was it? Was it a few years or what was it?
Well, initially it took me about 3 years, right? In the sense of I was starting, trying to rebuild my business, try to put my head in order. And but initially I was doing this for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, it's the same as yourself. Like, you started like in having to get back into your, you know, like your physical self, like to get that confidence that you could get up. Like, I'm looking at you across the screen, like we're here doing this interview on Zoom. But then, like,
technology had the modern day.
Yeah. But then, like, you have the situation, right? Okay. Where you've done everything for yourself in the sense of you are now an ambassador. An ambassador, like, for people like yourself that give up, that do nothing. Here you are on the radio, like, you're confident, you're not giving in, your resilience is amazing. And that's what I found by, you know, having that goal and that dream. Like I can see even from your text and, like, talking to your father, like, the excitement even he has and proud of the fact that you're doing this. And I applaud that.
I appreciate them kind words, because like you said, you either have two options: to put the shoulder to the wheel, or you can curl up in the ball, like I say, and not use it to help people. When you went on to Mount Everest, I was interested in, is there certain, like, because I was watching a documentary, it was on Netflix, I forget what it was called, Seven Peaks or something, but I was always interested, is there certain seasons for climbing Mount Everest? Because I always seen like it's a queue of people going up. Is that queue, is there only so many people allowed to go up at a time, or how does it work?
No, I suppose when I went first, it was only, like, say, for instance, I was on the summit with only three or four people initially, right? Yeah. On my first trip. The second trip, like, there was about 15 of us on the summit. Now there could be 100 or 150 going.
Really?
Times, and basically it's the same as Carn Tool. I remember going up Carn Tool, like, where you wouldn't get 100 people in a week.
Yeah.
And myself and Moriarty and Tagney and, you know, McHennessy at the time, it was like just amazing. Like, there was grass in the ladder, right? And then, like, over the years, and you can't object to this, right? Okay, and I know some people try to object to it. You can't kill a person's ambition or dream or aspiration. right? So, like, even though now we have, I think, 20, 30,000 people a year on Cairn 2, and it could be more, like, I'd be open to correction on this. You know, each and every one, I was just out now yesterday again, and I go out every week. Like, this is my cathedral. This is where I love bringing people. I probably have had over 20,000 people, you know, like, in my lifetime now on Cairn 2. And it gives me a buzz, like, the effort they put into it. Like, and when they come down, they're so excited. And, you know, that to me is what happened to me. If I wasn't allowed to go up at the time, I wouldn't have had that. Yes, I've done it. I'm conquering my mental health issues, right? And it gave me something to aspire to. I was winning. I was there. I succeeded. And, you know, like, even in yourself, right, okay, like, you know, initially, like, all these small successes are huge. They're an Everest. What you've gone through, like, is, like, for me, standing on top of Cairn 2, it was my Everest at the time, but then you moved your Everest. Like, I know that you probably, I don't know you as such, right, okay, but I followed you. And I know for a fact that you probably have dreams, goals, and aspirations now.
Absolutely.
And they keep moving, and they're your Everest. And I'm so privileged to say that I became the first person in the world to do what I've done. I'm living in Kerry, and I can have and inspire others to have their Everest. And it doesn't mean climbing mountains. It just gives me the platform.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, in my case, my Everest when I was in hospital, my Everest was lifting my arm up 1 inch. But like you said, when you have the small ones in Cairn 2, then up to Mount Everest, same with everyone's goals, that kind of small and work your way up. Now, if you want to get in contact with me throughout the show with any questions or requests, you can contact me through my Instagram, enoconnell321, or drop me an email on my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. We're going to go for a very quick ad break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be straight back after these.
Stand Out with Ian O'Connell on Radio Kerry.
Now, you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, here on Radio Kerry. I'm here today with Pat Falvey. Pat is a high-altitude mountaineer, expedition leader, and polar explorer. He was the first person to complete the seven summits twice, with the summiting of Mount Everest reached from both sides. If you're just joining us, the full interview will be up on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section after the show, or you can now get this interview as well as all the shows I've done so far on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Stand Out with Ian O'Connell. When you were going, setting off for Everest that time, or the two times, when you were leaving, I was interested in thinking, because I could only imagine your family, not that they doubted, but were they reluctant to say go for it, like, obviously, because it's a massive risk?
Of course, you know, like it's the same on anything, any family. Like, yeah. I was going into a risk at the time, and I never forget it, 1 in 4 would die. That was the stats, right, for a long time, right? And I never forget my dad, and, like, parents be parents, and you asked a very relevant question, came to me, and my dad said, for God's sake, don't go, you could die, right?
Yeah.
Because why don't you take up golf? So I thought about it, and the following morning I picked up the Cork Examiner, which was called the Cork Examiner at the time, front page headlines, golfer hit with golf ball dies. I'm going climbing. And I'm still alive, even though I know 50 climbers I've climbed with have actually passed away following their dreams. Indeed, this week alone, like Noel Hanna, a very good friend of mine, has actually given his life to an 8,000 meter. And, you know, it saddens me terribly. And one of the biggest, I suppose, shocks that I did get was when Ger MacDonald, who I had mentored initially, right, okay, died on K2.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I just love people having an Everest, but anyone with a passion, like the minute that you rang, right, okay, to say to do this interview, like I just jumped on it straight away and I said, I'll do that interview. Because of the fact I know, and from hearing from you and seeing you in the different forums on media, that you have a passion for what you do. And anyone that is successful, and you do the same yourself, if you see someone with a passion, you help them.
Absolutely. And when they're down, not to kick them down to bring them back up. When you are, because I'm aware that there's definitely two sides, but when you're going up Everest, like the likes of Cairn 2 and other mountains, there are so many routes. How many, like, main routes up Everest is there, and is there, like, a main one that people go to, like, which is the most dangerous?
Well, it's probably south side and the north side.
Yeah.
Which way you're going to go up Everest is dangerous. Now, in the sense of being a technical climber, there's nothing technical that I couldn't do, like whether it's that K2 or anything else. Like I'm proficient in what I do. I'm a professional mountaineer. I love what I do, and I'm trained with my skills. And that's the most important thing when you're doing something, is to get the skills right. The big problem with the likes of Everest is the objective danger, or K2, or any of the big mountains, whether it's the Matterhorn. It's what you don't see, and you have to be good at perceiving. Avalanches, rockfall, landslides, pulmonary edema, cerebral edema. You know, your heart, like, expanding, like, where it's just going to blow up. And then, like, you know, where the cerebral edema comes in, where it's that depression on the back of your head, and it's forcing your eyes out through your sockets. And all of those things have to be conquered, as well as the technical sides. Now, we're in a different era at the moment. Some people there's what we call the tick list people. Like, I remember once, like, someone said to me, my dad said to me, I was being criticized because, say, I was going to Everest, right? And, like, some people were saying, who do you think you are? You're going to die. You have no experience and things like that. But I trained. And my dad said to me, he said, sometimes, you know, when someone is critical about you, right, don't try to prove what they're saying wrong, because the only way that you're going to gain respect is by continuing doing it and to put your naysayers off. Like I did, like when I was doing it first, they said, oh yeah, this is just a flash in the pan, Pafalvi, like doing this. Like, I've done 185 expeditions. I've lived with 32 tribes. I've studied 18 religions. I have written books about this. But when I started, of course people were going to be critical.
Yeah.
They were going to say, who does this fella think? The same as when I left school to become a millionaire at 15. They say he's like a dope. But then when you have persistence and you have a form, there is a formula in success. It's about attributes.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you know this. It's about the passion, the desire, the commitment, the focus, you know, the having, the building the teams. So that's basically where I come from. It's not about me. And the other thing as well, like, that people don't understand, like, I'm out front, you know? And, like, I suppose it's like Shackleton, and it's like Scott and Amundsen, Hillary and Tenzing. You know what I mean? Those people, like, have been sung.
Yeah.
What about all the unsung heroes? The unsung heroes, like, that are behind that. For me, it was my family. For you, it was your family. The people I have in your back. And then you go out, and basically what behind you is all these people that are the young sung heroes for your success. And we must remember that.
What I was thinking, do you know the way when you go up, and, like, I've read articles online, I've seen it a lot. Some people, obviously, like you said, 1 in 4, unfortunately, don't make it. For, like, the families back home, is there, because I watched, do you know Spencer Matthews?
I do, yeah.
His brother, they, it was on Sky there, they went back up far to see, could they find his brother's body.
Yep.
Do you think, how come there's that? It obviously costs thousands. Is there any way in the future that there'll be a way of going up to look for the bodies?
Yeah, well, the thing with it is, everybody that does this, including Spencer Matthews, because I met him.
Really?
I thought he shouldn't have done it. I think his father pushed it. There was no mention of his father on that documentary about how the fact that, like, I met him in South America, I met him in Nepal, and the people he was with, which weren't mentioned either, which actually in a court case was found that, you know, that they weren't responsible, which sometimes they were making allusions to it. When we go into the dead zone, when someone decides to go to Everest, K2, any of the other situations, right, they're putting their lives at risk. It's simple. If it's a case they don't got the techniques or the fitness, right, there is a possibility that they will die.
Yeah.
When they die, everybody that goes there, right, okay, knows that they do not put other people's lives at risk searching for the body. Every single one of our team, and our Irish team, would have been notified that if it's a case they die, they're left there in the dead zone. Now, everybody wants to get their people back, but sometimes it causes, you know, it's like mountain rescue. The first thing that you do a mountain rescue is you have to make sure you're safe yourself. And when you're safe yourself, you can then go in and help other people. But if you're not safe and you're going into a position like death zone to take a corpse or a body out, you are putting other people's lives at risk. And, you know, I have an opinion on it. I also see the benefit, like, you know, the family's trauma, like that they go on search and they spend like probably a quarter of a million or a million to do so. But they're also putting people's lives at risk. So I would have an opinion on that.
Yeah, I thought the same. Like, you know, they put all the, even the camera crew that followed him up for that documentary, like there's obviously a massive risk there. For people that are going for Everest and go try to climb it, is there any like mountain that they do, say, for training, like Kilimanjaro? Is there any specific mountain that they do before that to build up for Everest?
Well, the first thing they have to do really is like you get used to the altitude. Altitude kills, right?
Yeah.
So there is a progression like that I would say that they should do. They should do, you know, like a 5,000, 6,000 meter and then a 7,000 meter like Aconcagua and then like go to Everest, right? But some people are so driven that what they do is, like I had a guy on to me the other day, never put on like a pair of crampons, and he was saying like, I want to go to Everest next year. And I'm saying to him, like, you know, forget it. But he kept on persuading me. He was strong. He could do it. And I said, well, I'm not your man, because like I advise and I consult with people all around the world. And I said, look, if you want to do it, and I had one person that actually asked me to, and this is where they get caught up, right? That, in other words, I was advising him, right? And then I said, I tell you what I do, because I know it, I nearly died myself on the fixed ropes, right? I said, come down, I'll train you to do the fixed ropes, even for nothing, right? Because he had the passion of doing it. But he got so busy and caught up with the sponsorship, he never actually did the fixed ropes training, right?
Really?
And then what happened? Like, he died because he came off the fixed ropes and he slipped. So, like, that type of thing, when it comes to doing something, you have, like, you're not going to become a heart surgeon and start digging inside in someone's heart and not have learned the skills for it. Now, an awful lot of people, like, are going to these big mountains because of the fact that, and give them their due, like, they're fantastic. Like, they're doing marathons and they're doing ultras and they're doing all of this. But for a lot of people, they want that tick list. They've climbed the highest mountain in the world. And for anyone out that's going to criticize them for doing this, as long as Everest is the highest mountain in the world or other mountains are there, people will be attracted to it the same as Carnuntool. I see people going up in Carnuntool and you know what? I want to hit them. They'll be going up there in the wrong gear and stuff like that. But that's their choice. And if something happens, and as mountain rescue or as in a rescue are, whether it's here or the Himalayas, my job is to take my skills, or the mountain rescue people, we never object to going out there and helping others. You know, don't take into consideration like the weather or their gear or something like that, and then they get into trouble. You know, like for me personally, and this is a personal thing, right? I have a tendency like to get mad, but I understand.
Yeah.
And like I love helping people, and like as rescuers, whether it's here or in the Himalayas or anywhere else, that's what we love doing. So we will always do it anyway.
Now we're going to go for a very quick ad break. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry. Lots more to come. We'll be straight back after these. Now you're very welcome back to Stand Out with me, Ian O'Connell, here on Radio Kerry. I'm here today with Pat Falvey. You on that documentary that I looked at before, and a lot of people would see it. Do you know, I have no idea what it's actually called, but when you put a ladder across, there's like a big crevice in the ice. What exactly is that, Pat? I wanted to ask you that when they're crossing.
Well, basically what it's like is that these ice falls are moving at about 3 foot a day, right? And as it's coming down the mountain and it's going over a curve, the front of the ice is like gravity, like it falls like that in the piece left behind. And then like you have a crevasse, which is a big void. And you get lots of those, like, you know, the particular one you're talking about is the Khumbu Icefall.
Yeah.
Moving 3 foot per day. Like it's a river moving, but it's a river of ice. And every now and then, sometimes the ice becomes like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Even in the last week, there was three Sherpas killed in the ice fall, right? It's the biggest killer, right? And when you go through there, it's like, you know, if you got a load of popcorn and you threw the popcorn on the thing and all the holes, right? That's what it's like through the Khumbu ice fall. But these crevasses can be 500 foot in depth, the height of the county hall and higher. And then what you do, you put 3, 4, 5, 6 ladders across. And I tell you the honest truth, it scares the crap out of me.
When I was myself watching it on Netflix, I was like...
Yeah, it's frightening. And but you also have to have the confidence that you can do it. Like, even down here in Kerry, like, we run courses where we do crevasse rescue training, crossing ladders. Like, I put ladders across a pond, right, that we have. But the thing with it is, what can happen is, if they fall over, they fall into the pond. And I remember the old days where we have a really crappy, slimy pond. So, like... They don't want to fall in, so therefore they have to learn the techniques to cross those ladders. They have to learn the techniques of fixed rope techniques. And after all of that, no matter how much that I train people, right, they're still open to the fact that climbing or mountains are dangerous places. When you go up Carn Tool, it's not a walk in the park. You're not climbing, you know, down through the park here, right, okay? The terrain is unstable. You know, and there is, things can happen. So we usually say this is an adventure sport, and once you actually go into adventure sport, there's an element of risk. And you know why most people go into adventure sport? Because of the risk.
Yeah.
And then when something happens, like, they complain.
Yeah.
So they're told there's risks involved.
It's all about going outside the, and even anything in life, going outside the comfort zone, like, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, lots of people nowadays want to go outside their comfort zone, and I have no objection with it, you know what I mean? And like, you know, it's like, I will never tell someone that they can't do something, or I will never stop anyone from, you know, doing what they want to do. But I would ask people to be cautious, to learn about the traits and the skills and, you know, the weather. And like, there is a progression. Like, I know people, like, that are climbing these big mountains, and they can't even, like, I was on the mountain in Carn Tool twice, and, you know, someone that was going to these places, they got lost twice on Carn Tool. And it's like, oh my God. You know, I hate that when that happens, right? And then they're professed as being experts.
It's all about, like you said, and the confidence as well. When you were, do you know, when you get up to base camp in Everest, what's that like there? Because you'd always see, like, online, there's, like, loads of tents. And one thing I wanted to ask, do you know the flags? There's, like, a line of flags. What exactly are they? Are they
These are prayer flags. And we also have a ceremony called the puja. But these flags and these stones and things like that, like, I've been 70 times now to Nepal. You know, like, I go to base camp every year once or twice myself, because it's my spiritual home. And I bring people, like people that are listening to this, to base camp. And it's one of the most amazing places on planet Earth. It's not about climbing the mountain. It's about the journey.
Yeah.
You're going to a place that's reverent, that was one time at the bottom of the sea, and there's sea creatures found on the top of the world. But the journey to base camp, right, because we have two sections. The journey to base camp, you're moving among an indigenous people. You're following in the footsteps of giants that actually went out before us. And you're, like, you're moving along, and you have these prayer flags, and you have, you know, these mani stones. But what it means, it says, Om Mani Padme Hum. And when they flicker like this in the wind, and it's written and written and written and written thousands of times, it goes to the wind, goes to the god. And what it says, it's a mantra. And it goes, Hail, who are we, which is us, who come from a turmoil world, which is not actually, you know, good all the time. But each and every one of us as souls have this power to become like that lotus flower, pure. And that's what I love. My philosophy is Buddhism. I'm a Catholic by religion. I'm an agnostic in performance, which means I'm not too sure what's after us. But if I'm going to die, I could be full sure, like, I'd be praying to God to go to heaven.
Yeah. It's more of a belief sort of Buddhism, is it?
Yeah, Buddhism to me is a philosophy, even though they're trying to make it into a religion. Buddhism is about being the best that you can be, in no matter what you're doing. And also try not to be harmful to anyone. So I can be full sure, like, that Putin isn't a Buddhist.
Yeah. And, like, do you have you been that way with years, or when did that kind of start?
Well, it started after I tried to take my life through suicide. I went to Nepal to find myself. And I wanted to become a floater, you know, just floating around, like, you know. And I met these Buddhist monks, and basically they said, Pat, you have too much to offer. It's the same as yourself. You have too much to offer. Stop lying on your ass and doing nothing. And here you are producing a radio program, right? So therefore they said, Pat, will you go back? You know, there's no problem in being commercial, you know what I mean, to make money, to have a house and do these things, but don't be greedy. And, you know, try to help others to achieve their goals, dreams, and aspirations. And that's what I do. I travel the world. I write books. You know what I mean? And I try to inspire people to live the best life they can be. Because you know why? You have only one life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like you said, that time to you, you attempted and your kids came into your mind and you came back and opened up, and that obviously took a weight off your shoulders. Is there actually people, did you call them Sherpas? Are they living at base camp themselves?
Sherpa is a tribe of people that come from the east. These are the people that settled in the Khumbu Valley. One time this was known as Shangri-La. This is why I go every year. I go to visit my temple, like where Shangri-La had existed. We make our way through the foothills, in through those gorges, in through the, where those Ephesus, like, are pushed from the bottom of the sea. Remember, this was at the bottom of the sea to the top of the world. And as I'm climbing there and seeing those Mani flags and those Mani stones and interacting with the people, right, it brings back to me how lucky I am. Every day I get up and I'm grateful. And I'm so grateful of the fact that I have had the opportunity to have all these opportunities that I've had, being an Irishman, being a bricklayer that came from Grána Brothar. And then I go and I see these people, like, and they're living very humble lives, very poor lives, you know, and they're still happy within the existence. But, like, what happens is, creates this unhappiness is when we want, you know, too much. And it could be said that I was greedy myself, and I've learned to have gratitude instead of greed. I went to Nepal as a capitalist, or as a capitalist that wanted to become a dropped out hippie, because I failed, and I was sent back a social capitalist. So now I'm a social capitalist, and I believe, like, in the sharing of our wealth and the helping of others to have a good life. And that's what I do, all, whether it's in a third world country or here. My job, I'm 66 now, I'm drawing the old age pension. I've just came back from a 100-day trek, you know, like, I was two in Kilimanjaro, ballooning over the Serengeti, doing a retreat in Zanzibar, came back for 2 days, 7 days on the Camino, went 8 weeks to the Himalayas, did two base camps and an island peak. And, you know, I have a couple of conditions. I have an oncologist and a heart specialist, so that will actually tell you there. And my oncologist says, like, you know, Jesus, you shouldn't be doing all of this. And I said, you know, why not? And she said, you know, if you pick up an infection, you could die. Well, I far prefer to be dead doing something than to be sitting, not doing anything when I can do it. You know, I think, you know, like, it comes to us all. And I hope that when it comes to me not to be doing anything, that I can actually take that gracefully and actually still have an effect on people with my attitude.
You'd rather be doing something you love. Now we're going to go for our last ad break. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry, because there's lots more to come in the last part of the show. We'll be straight back after these. Now you're very welcome back to Standing Out with me, Ian O'Connell, here on Radio Kerry. If you're just joining us, don't worry, because we got you covered. You can now get this interview straight after the show on the Radio Kerry website in the podcast section, or you can now get it on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Standing Out with Ian O'Connell. You said there about the 100th trek trip. Before we finish up, I want to ask, you've been obviously all over the world to different countries and different mountains. Is there any, and I know, like you said, base camp there has a special place in your heart. Is there any other mountain or area in the world that you travel back to every time that you just, it's like second home to you, that you absolutely love, even if it's the view or the surroundings?
Can I tell you, like, I travel for 7 months a year, right, for the last 30 years. And the most favorite place I find in the world to come to is here in Kerry.
Boy.
My most favorite mountain is Carron Too. It is the place, like, I find peace and therapy. It's the place where I can relax. And it's the place where I think about my next expeditions when I'm here. There is nowhere in this planet that I would prefer better than being here. Now, I have, like people say to me, oh, what's your favorite mountains? Because of the fact I'm a polar explorer and I'm an adventurer that climbs, I can tell you every place I go to, I have an equal fondness. Antarctica. Just even to hear the word Antarctica, it sends a shiver up through your spine. Minus 60 degrees Celsius, winds at 120 kilometers per hour, right? Then Everest, you know, like it can be so cold at times you can get a kettle of water fired up in the air and it comes down in crystals. To be in the majesty of these places, that one time at the bottom of our sea, I am so honored that being an Irishman, you know, living in Kerry, being a Cork man, right, that I have been given this opportunity to have what I consider an amazing life. Now, I know I work hard at it. When people ask me about my happiness, I'm nearly in nirvana. You know what I mean? There was a time like I was 30% happy. I work on a currency, not of money, but of happiness. Like in Bhutan, right? I believe that people come to me as a consultant or as a mentor or as a coach. Like I try to show people that once you are happy, and like, you know, we talk about the glass half full, half empty.
Yeah.
So half full, half empty is you're not too sure. You're neither in anxiety or depression or happiness. When you decide you can have that choice to go down in your 50%, which starts bringing you down into fear, anxiety, depression, right? If you go up, you're heading for nirvana. So I try to teach people, like in my mentoring and in my coaching and in my courses that I do, that let's head for nirvana and take it up. So if you're 20% happy now, you're in depression, right? And I just ask people out there, like, you think themselves how happy you are. If you're at 50%, you know what I mean? You're starting going into living a happier life. And you've only one life. And remember this for anyone out there, I'm 66. My oncologist says, like, you know, I probably won't live till I'm 80. That's only 14 years away. I'm betting her on a difference. I will live. And if I die, I tell her I'm already after living 240 years. So, you know what I mean? I'm not going to stop doing what I'm doing. So to satisfy someone's opinion that I might die, because I'd be dead if I don't do what I'm doing. So I would say to people, like, have a dream, have a goal, go for it. You've got one chance. And if anyone is sitting and having dreams, goals and aspirations that they're not fulfilling, you know, just do it. You've only one life and it comes to an end. You know, we live in this world and basically our contribution is 0000000, I think it's 12, 14 zeros, 0.1%. That's the contribution that we make in planet Earth in relation to our existence. And they're just in fear of doing anything. And especially after COVID, like, remember COVID for fellas in their 50s, right? Fellas in their 50s had spent 3 years planning to do something, 3 years tied up, and then waiting 3 years before they do something. That's 9 years. So if you're 60, you'll be nearly 70. If you're 50, you'll nearly be 60. And the clock is ticking. There's only one thing we all got equally. Each and every one out there has the same time as me or you, right? It's what we do with our time is the thing, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. You only have one life, and if you live it right enough, that's enough, like you say.
Can I give your audience one bit of a secret how to fulfill anything that you want in life before?
Fire away.
And here it is, you got to want it. But here, this is what my mother gave me. If you want something bad enough, you must go out and fight for it. You must give up your time and your sleep for it. If your life seems so lonely and useless, but all that you do is you dream and you plan about it. If gladly you fret for it, but then you sweat for it, but then you go for it. Go for it with all of your capacity, your strength and tenacity. If you simply go after the things in life that you want, though tired, gaunt and lonely, then you will get it.
Absolutely.
Of reality. So thank you very much, Ian, and namaste.
Thanks a million, Pat, and I appreciate your time, all right? Now, unfortunately, that's all we have time for tonight. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and I appreciate you tuning in as always. If you have any questions or requests for next week's show, you can get me on my Instagram, enoconnell321, or through my email address, ioconnell@radiokerry.ie. A massive thanks to Pat for coming on today and sharing his story. He's done amazing work with all the records and the accomplishments he's had so far in his career climbing extreme mountains and Mount Everest, and the list goes on. It's as long as my arm. So a massive congratulations to to Pat and everything that he does, and I appreciate his time tonight. I hope you're all having a good week. Stay tuned into Radio Kerry because Brian Priestley is up next with That's Jazz. I'll be back at the same time next Wednesday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Until then, stay safe and mind yourself.